meeting where it's expected, and of course, the public has one-on-one dashes. So there are plenty of dash confirmations that go with it. We are hosting a meeting in person as well as online. It is Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. 6 p.m. start of the public works meeting. So then up with any citizen comments?
None.
Alright, minutes for correction or approval from August 17, 2021, the last time we met. Suggestions for change, requests for updates?
I'm good.
Okay, alright. And it's all good from August 17, 2021. Moving on to new business, item number one, PW 2021-53, solid waste RFP contract.
So it is not a contract, it's the actual RFP. Sorry for that typo on the agenda. So it's a draft RFP within your documents tonight for you to review. The last time we went out to RFP was 5 years ago. It was a project that I first worked on when I was here. At that time, we added an on-demand service for composting, and we included electronic waste recycling within that contract. We kept that language in there, and then we added an on-demand household hazardous waste collection in this RFP. So similarly to the composting, if you would like that service, you call, you set it up. That's how we're hoping it will work with the contractor moving forward from this point. But in regards to the whole RFP, it's relatively similar to the last one we did. It does include dumpsters for all of our buildings and all of our special events, including porta potties and hand washing stations. And then it also includes dumpsters when we move into the new building. So that is a little bit of the changes that are in there, but all in all, it's really the same thing except for that household hazardous waste program that we're putting out as we did 5 years ago. Now also, in putting together the list of people that we're going to direct send it to, it is drastically reduced. Root is no longer, Advanced is no longer. So we are, you know, it's a more limited supply for who can provide these services to us, but we're hoping to get a good bid amount moving forward. So if you all agree that this is okay to move forward, we would have the whole city council review it too, just to make sure that they are in agreement with this proposal as well. We would send it out on Friday and then get all bids back at the end of the month.
When we sent it out, RFP 5 years ago, how many people did we have come back?
We had six.
Okay. So now two of those have been eliminated on this group.
Yeah. We gained one, too. Was it River City or whatever out of LaSalle? They've expressed interest in trying to win the business. So just a note on the household hazardous waste. We have not talked to any of the haulers yet about whether that's feasible, what the cost is. I'm not aware of any other municipalities that do it. In fact, Naperville's the closest household hazardous waste pickup because they run basically like an industrial dump site. You can just drive, you know, paint cans and oil cans over there. So we're breaking new ground. We'll see what the market says, and maybe it's feasible and maybe it's not worth it. So we'll see.
Jason, you have any questions?
Nope.
That's all you had. So I appreciate the honor of talking. All right. Well, I am good to moving forward. Anything here?
Yep.
Excellent. Item number two, PW 2021-54, pavement management plan update.
Right. Within the packet, we have a memo along with a kind of a brief presentation. It's going to cover a couple items on the menu, memo. Typically this time of year, and we've done this the last several years, we have brought forth recommended streets for the upcoming construction season in the Road to Better Roads program. So kind of following that timeline, we're doing that here tonight. So within the overview in the program update is a recommended plan for next year and beyond. For the following 4 years. So a budget has been established by have my cards and my rod of about $1.5 million to target for a road program. And certainly that will be reviewed on an annual basis as funds are available. A couple things to note that are not in the program, and these are a couple items that we pulled out. Baseline Road, that's just been a project that we haven't been addressing as part of the road program. It is the worst rated street within the city, and that's certainly confirmed by the ratings. So we have updated our estimates, anywhere from $450,000 to $650,000 to address that particular road. Kendall County has moved forward with Bristol Township designing the reconstruction, of the Cannonball Curve. So next month, we'll bring forth a memo along with kind of a snapshot of what the proposal is. But basically, the county is looking for Bristol Township and the city roughly a 50-50 split on costs. As we sit here today, we're estimating that to be the city's portion about $250,000. There would have to be intergovernmental agreements between the township and the city. The county is pursuing land acquisition at this point. Whether or not that gets completed over the wintertime and it's going to move into construction next year, to be determined, and certainly all part of the IGA. So, something to be aware of, but something down the line could be brought before.
What's the cost? I mean, the idea there, they're just going to straighten it out somewhat, or?
Soften the curve and put in an appropriate super elevation. Basically, the entire curve will be at a grade to it. So, that's the correct way to address the situation. The curve is too sharp for speed. It wasn't built to any standard back in the day when it was constructed. So it's the proper way to address the situation. And we'll bring those plans. We'll have more detail at the October meeting. So tonight, we're looking for concurrence for next year's program. We can breeze through the PowerPoint here. A lot of it is just some background that may be useful. But looking back at the 2018 data and just kind of providing some of the history and then the recommendations moving forward. So as far as green management goes and the goals, basically, the project goals are to rate each roadway in inventory within the city, and then develop maintenance strategies and apply costs to those strategies, and then certainly review that against budgets and needs and how it impacts all of those, and then develop a budget and come up with a long-range plan. So, payment management program in a nutshell, it's a decision-making process that helps municipalities make cost-effective decisions concerning the maintenance and rehab of the jurisdiction's pavement. So that's kind of your textbook definition as well. So, one of the things that, the program itself, the payment management program, evaluates is how each street aligns on the deterioration curve. So on the left, you have the pavement condition index, 100 being a roadway that's freshly paved, brand new. And then toward the bottom, it's rated at 50, so it just ages out over time. So in your first few years of pavement life, there's little deterioration, but at some point it starts dropping off rather quickly. So the key from a resurfacing standpoint is to catch it before it gets to a point where it needs reconstruction. So that's typically when you get down into that 65 to 80 range, for example. Yeah, where Barton is moving this cursor. You've seen this a few times before.
Memorized it.
So some of the next slides is real brief. So the city has hired an outside firm to come in and test
all of its streets, and they use a couple different pieces of equipment. They evaluate the surface, but they also use a piece of equipment that evaluates what's underneath the surface as well. Those two indices are used to come up with your pavement rankings, and those are noted off to the right, ranging from excellent to very good, down to your very poor streets. Next slide, a couple of examples of, you know, excellence in some of those other categories. McHugh Road recently paved, that would be in an excellence category. Baseline Road, as we talked about, very poor. Alice Avenue also fall into that poor category. So just to give you an example of what those are. As far as the detail of what the city's inventories look like, so in 2018, just a little bit over 113 miles of roadways were tested. Some of those roadways included only binder course, as developers had not put surface course on those yet. From a surface rating standpoint, which is, the top course, which everybody can see, a decent rating, the overall rating was 76. At that time, 26% was rated for fair, or worse. And certainly, those are the areas that everybody complains about and wishes to be addressed. So just a quick snapshot between 2013 and 2018. The city originally did its first inspection in 2013 and then followed up 5 years later with the 2018 inspection. Roughly staying the same as far as fair or worse categories go. Percentages are very close. There are additional ones that are in the higher end category in 2018. So quite a bit of work had been done between those years, as well as the development spending. So the report at the time in 2018 recommended an annual expenditure of a little bit over $2 million. That was to keep up with the rating, if you will, in the mid-70s. So another way to look at it is by spending over $2 million a year, you would basically resurface every street every 20 years, surface every street once every 20 years, which is standard and which is within the anticipated life of asphalt. And to give an example of spending less, so if you spend $1 million per year, basically you're resulting in paving once every 40 years. Clearly not enough, and certainly the residents wouldn't be pleased with that. Next few slides, just kind of a brief overview of some of the work that has been done by the city. Over 60 miles have been resurfaced since 2013, so that's pretty significant. A little bit less than half is mentioned related to development activity and developers completing their improvements. Over 20 miles related to the road, to better roads program. And then on top of that, we have countryside work. There have been a few federal grants, and then other sources such as ComEd, Kendall County, and through the rebuild project. Another way to look at it, some of the history over time, as far as miles of a street per year. So certainly 2021, the city was very aggressive in its repaving streets, and the Fox Hill development, which is utilizing the rebuild funds, is a part of that. Kind of breeze through the next few slides, but those are just kind of a history of where the paving has occurred. But again, quite a bit of activity since 2013. So as far as recommendations and then moving forward with the new plan, at this time we're recommending a new evaluation of the pavement. So hiring a firm that will come out and reevaluate things in 2025. So it's industry standard practice to inspect every 5 to 7 years. So our recommendation is to kind of stretch that out a little bit and push it out to 7 years. And it falls right in line with the last inspection was in 2018.
15, so 7 years out, 2025. So roughly, the inspections would occur within that 2025 timeframe. Analysis and creation of the program over the winter, 2025-26, and then kind of presentation and approval by the council in the spring of 2026 as a rough recommended timeline. As far as the specific four-year plan moving forward, the original five-year plan adopted in 2018, basically the city will complete all of those streets that were identified within 2022, and the 2022 program has the capacity to do a bit more. We are at a point to take a look at things and come up with a new plan. And as we're here today, certainly every September, we typically reevaluate and reapprove the upcoming year. But we do kind of look forward and try to establish that for the plan. After tonight, if approved by the committee, we would take the plan to the city council. Then we typically follow up with engineering agreements at the next series of meetings, and then we'll off and running with design. We try to get an early letting date in February, and then construction begins in May. So ideally, you're bidding it early in the year to take advantage of contractor being hungry, and that's a certain payoff in the past for the city. So here's the plan and the recommendations. So following the presentation, there's a couple other documents that maybe visualize this a bit better. A little bit hard to show on PowerPoint. But in 2022, basically we're showing Cantaloupe Trail being part of that, as well as a couple streets near the new City Hall. Try to clean them up before moving into those quarters. Then the East Main Street water main replacement project is under design. Outside of the water main replacement, there is additional roadway work that's to be done. So kind of piggybacking all that into that project and completing that work. And then the areas shown on the slide, the part is pulling up, basically would be the completion of the original plan, which is wrapping up all the work in Greenbrier, and tackling Sunflower and completing all of the remaining streets within those two subdivisions. And then as far as future years go, we certainly mapped out the different color coding, trying to capture streets that are identified by the pavement management program is kind of being next on the list. So, after we get done with 2025, one thing that we need to keep in mind and consider is that there was quite a few subdivisions that were put in the late 90s and early 2000s. So you look at that and choose by 2026, that pavement is 20, 25 years old and probably well overdue for resurfacing. The guidance of working with Eric here suggested kind of throwing all these together. So all of these subdivisions basically kind of fall into that category of needing resurfacing work done, and probably will be overdue by the time 2026 rolls around. And if you look at the surface scores, you can certainly argue that resurfacing some of those subdivisions could be done today or next year. So that's a pretty big ticket item. That's over $8 million worth of paving. It's just something definitely to keep in mind by the council as we move forward. So certainly, by doing Fox Hill, by completing Sunflower and Greenbrier, you're chalking away at some of those larger subdivisions, but there's quite a few. So that's kind of the end of the overview, and then the follow-up, a couple of exhibits, just the overall plan on the one pager, kind of shows it a little bit more clean.
And then it kind of gets into the detail behind it, you know, which identifies some of the scoring and some of the estimated costs. And again, we kind of total things up to approximately $1.5 million. So a lot of information fairly quickly. Any questions, comments?
So just have a question, but it's mainly about the 2026 options, again, the cost that's in there based on today, based on projections.
I believe we project it out.
I think
we do have an inflation factor in those.
Okay.
Well, we talked about it at the staff level, and I think this is probably pretty indicative of what we've been doing all along is, you know, you plug in your base level number, and then other projects are going to come up. We're going to get grants, you know, we're going to have extra money left over. There's going to be a road that everybody just agrees is awful and needs to be bumped up the list. You know, we've had all that happen. What we have to do, water mains in the subdivision, then we end up doing the, you know, redoing the roads in the entire subdivision. So while the target is $2 million, and we've only been spending about $1 million, you know, on our base level, we've been doing much more than that through these other programs. So still slightly behind schedule, but, you know, we just started this thing in 2012, 2011, somewhere in there, you know, before we did that LIDAR, first LIDAR scan in 2013. So, and when we talked about it at the staff level here with the mayor, you know, we only had about $1 million plugged in going forward, at least for the next 3 years. And then after that, it would cut off in the air. It was like $500,000 is what we had planned. He basically just looked at it in our financial position and told us to put it at $1.5 million going forward, and then we're going to have to pick and choose, you know, supplemental projects each year going forward. So certainly we're getting very close to being able to say we funded this, we need to keep funding it, but, you know, there's no struggle involved in, you know, selection as much as it is just making sure that we're not missing deadlines and, you know, being responsive when complaints come up.
Scales from 0 to 100, the baseline is it should be a negative.
Yes.
Okay.
Just one other thing. So we're pretty much all done for this year, right?
Correct.
So you guys look to see, because, and Joe can probably attest to this, I was shocked lately how much Batavia's doing right now. And I don't know, are they getting a special rate to do them at the end of the season like that? Because they're doing a bunch of roads through town where you were working there, and
yeah,
a bunch of these other streets around that area, brand new.
Like he said before, he'd love to have that budget.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean,
but also that could be the rebuildable and what money as well.
Right.
You know, like we're putting ours in Fox Hill, which is a long roadway. You're just not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So maybe that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
that's where you're at.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think contractors are probably giving out special rates, you know.
I didn't know if it was a thing like they have stuff left at the end of the year.
Against the gun.
Yeah, I'm under pressure.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, yeah, if you go out to Fox Hill, you got all sorts of activity out there.
Okay.
And then starting potentially on Friday, there's going to be multiple crews.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get concrete work, you're going to have little machines going on, it's going to be pretty intense in Fox Hill for the next month or so.
Yeah, I was just curious about that.
We just had a bunch of race cars come through town.
Yeah,
well, they picked it because they redid 47.
Do you see any guy tonight?
No, you don't.
Yeah, we just take that to the Rather group.
Mm-hmm.
Item number 3, PW 2021-55.
Before we go, did we just bring that to the city council for discussion? Or, okay, I just didn't hear.
Yeah, everybody was good with the 5-year schedule that we've got proposed in general, right?
Just wanted to make sure.
Sure.
Item number 3, PW 2021-55, water conservation ordinance updates.
Right, at the August committee meeting, we had a brief overview of some of the items that we need to be updated within the city ordinances to comply with you know, potential connection to Lake Michigan water. So those items have been crafted into the city chapter 5 of the city code. And this has been reviewed by Attorney Ward, as well as Eric has taken a look at it. Certainly we've done some things off of the building department. We thought we were going to have to make some other adjustments in other areas within the city code, but at the end, all of it is going to be compiled within Chapter 5. So those changes are noted. I apologize about the formatting of the changes. Some of these items were to be cleaned up before they were sent off, but didn't quite happen. But a handful of changes, a handful of modifications, all of them were outlined within the memo from last month. And certainly be able to answer any questions or assistance on any specifics.
And as Brad kind of alluded to, all of the line through at the end is not actually a line through, that's just what wasn't needed in this part of the ordinance. So this will still be there.
This is a poor format.
I was going to ask that, because you're getting rid of a lot of stuff.
No.
We're cutting the red tape.
Yeah, we'll get that cleaned up.
I believe the last one that is affected is on
page
14.
PDF page 108. Yeah. The other two changes above that basically just says that the Public Works Department is supposed to fix leaks when they occur, and then you're supposed to implement water conservation measures. So the actual, specific changes are just those three or four on page 14 there.
What we talked about last month is we're essentially our deputies in practice as well.
Yeah.
Questions? Yeah. Jason?
So, as the city is evaluating its different water sources, just one topic that we wanted to introduce is the topic of non-revenue water and the need to reduce that as the city is evaluating its various sources. So we have a handful of slides. We'll just kind of run through those rather quickly. And certainly address any questions that anybody may have. But generally, why is it needed? And then we'll talk about briefly how you go about calculating water loss, and that's all part of the water audit. We recently just concluded the audit of the 2020 data of the city. And then there's some initiatives, potential initiatives for consideration as well as a recommended water replacement plan for the end. So, basically, if the city is going to consider Lake Michigan water, you have to comply with their non-revenue warming requirement, water loss requirements. So all Lake Michigan users are required to obtain an allocation permit. And a requirement with that permit is to have the water loss less than 10% of what you produce. So IDNR is the overall regulator of those allocation permits, and they also oversee the non-revenue water loss calculations. So spare a lot of detail as far as the different acts and what have you, but basically it's required by a number of different acts. It's also noted in the Illinois Administrative Code, and it is just a requirement of all Lake Michigan users. So just kind of the background and why it's necessary to look at. As far as just a quick overview of water audits and what does it mean, basically you're evaluating the amount of water that's pumped from your sources. In this case, from the deep wells running through the water treatment plants versus water that is being sold. There has been a big push throughout the United States getting control of water loss. There are a substantial amount of water that is lost every year on an annual basis. It's lost in, through a variety of reasons. The American Water Works Association, which is kind of the, you know, the governing body of all water, had come up with a manual that kind of describes how you are to calculate your water loss. So they have a manual, they have a spreadsheet, and have given guidance to you know, folks throughout the country on how to calculate it. So it also is, it serves as a purpose to standardize those calculations. So these can be comparable throughout the industry. You know, the basic premise is on the left, you have your water that's being produced. On the right, you have your water that's being generated in green there from a revenue perspective. But you also have your non-revenue water, which is kind of water lost, if you will. And the majority of that, you know, there's a lot of different buckets that the software dumps calculations into. Part of the analysis is to figure out where your water loss is at, so you can kind of fine-tune where you have to trim your preference. So as far as losses go, basically they can be you know, dumped into two major categories, your real or physical losses. That consists of water main breaks, or surface land leakage, storage tank overflows, things such as that. Your apparent losses have to do with data handling errors or customer meter inaccuracies, as well as theft. And certainly, water theft is out there and something that everybody is cognizant of. You know, this next slide I'm getting a little deeper than necessary tonight, but basically, you know, not all water loss kind of falls into that non-revenue category. Certainly there are authorized consumptions that are unbilled. You know, for example, you know, it might be a fire that's necessary to be used to fight, or flushing of mains and things such as that.
That's what we were doing, was flushing the mains or just letting it go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a couple different items on this slide. So American Water Works Association, as mentioned, has this water audit software. That's the software that's kind of used as an overall guide throughout the country. The IDNR, who controls the Lake Michigan allocations, has what's called an LMM2 form. They calculate things ever so slightly different, and they have a different water year, so there are some differences to be noted between the two forms. So if Lake Michigan is ultimately selected, using the LMO2 form would be necessary. And the next slide is kind of an indication of some of the differences, but one of the major differences is the timeline and the water year. And also an allocation is going to require 10 historical years of water audits. So say the city moves forward with an allocation permit, we're going to have to go back 10 years and calculate the water loss for the required 10 years. And that's a pretty decent size number. So, you know, just some of an overview of what goes into a water audit. So as far as how the city itself is doing, the 2020 data, you know, the water loss, non-revenue water loss is slightly over 12%, 12.4, so you know, it's not that, you know, it's pretty close to that 10% threshold. Certainly, there's a lot of folks that are well above that, so you know, pretty good results. The next slide, kind of, you know, if you were to connect out to Lake Michigan, where do you stand? So a little bit over 55% of its current customers are less than that. 10%, and then you know, folks that fall into that 12 to 20% is another roughly 25% of its customers. So, you know, basically, pretty close to being within that 10% threshold. And as you can see, there's folks that have 20-30% and beyond water loss. So, you know, growth is certainly pretty decent.
Some of those closer to the city, or closer to the lake?
Probably your older communities, especially. Communities that struggle, you know, with main facilities and things such as that. So this particular slide indicates kind of the chart of the non-revenue and where that is concentrated. So whatever 60% of that is associated with your real losses, so your water main breaks or leaks in the system. And then roughly 25% is within your apparent losses. So again, that's data errors or near inaccuracies. So some brief observations. Net revenue water loss has to be less than 10%, so since we're slightly over that. Again, if you move forward with the Lake Michigan allocation, you have to come up with a one item two that's noted is just proving the validity of the data. It's certainly critical, making sure that the data is correct and accurate. Addressing meters would be important. Already stated this, but your real loss is certainly the largest volume contributing to non-revenue water. And the apparent losses certainly should be considered as a part of investment. Reduction plan. So if we do move forward with Lake Michigan allocation, some of the initiatives that would be recommended for consideration, getting an annual testing of the master meters, so the meters that are at the water treatment plants, they're already on top of it, getting those checked out to make sure they're accurate on an annual basis.
You just replaced one at about $12,000 cost.
And I know Eric has been talking about the next item for quite some time, changing out meters and moving to new technology as far as how they're able to be read. Eric, you have several meters that are way out of date.
We do. We probably have meters that are over 30 years old still in the system.
So, with that, the rate or the amount of water at individuals' homes, that's just most likely it's an actor.
As they get old, they don't hear on our side yet.
Yeah, so it's potential lost revenue. So, it's capturing the revenue, certainly there's a cost with the installation of the new meter, paying that back over time. Another potential initiative would be, just increasing the water main replacement program. Some other minor items, just improving how things are tracked and performing annual leak detection. Certainly, you want to monitor any of the initiatives to make sure you're getting the appropriate amount of return. And then IDNR is going to require an annual audit. And certainly, it's good practice too, even if you don't go with the issue. So, some information on your water main system. So, we presented some of this, it's been a while, probably 5 years or so ago, but kind of a good snapshot of your system. Replacing some of the older water mains. So we have 150 miles of water main within the system. So that is a pretty significant system. Through the help of Eric, we've been able to capture that data and assign years of construction to that within the GIS. So we're able to create some graphs and provide some data on how old the water main is. So the next graph kind of breaks it down a little bit cleaner to read. Certainly the majority of the water main, over a half a million feet, was installed between 2000 and 2009. That's pretty significant. But there is quite a bit of water main that's older than 1980. There's still a decent amount of water main that's in the ground that's pre-1950 as well, over 4,000. The other way that, with Eric and Public Works that we look at is historically, or at least where the city is at, because there's two main types of pipe that's in the ground. You have your cast iron pipe, which is kind of pre-1980, and then post-1980, your ductile iron pipe. So the newer ductile iron pipe has a useful life of about 100 years. The cast iron pipe, between 50 and 60, kind of rule of thumb is is definitely no brittle. That's where Eric and the rest of the public works team does a lot of its breaks. And so there's over 62,000 feet of that still on the ground. And certainly, like we noted, that that's where the majority of the water breaks.
And that's where the newest is 41 years old now. So it's nearing the end of its useful life.
So just a quick snapshot of the replacement history. Certainly, the city's been replacing some water main every year, with the exception of last year, and the big bump being that countryside project, where we replaced almost the entire subdivision, over 17,000 feet of water main, and addressed a tremendous amount of issues out there.
Since that time, we've only had one main break up.
So this slide should have labeled it potential water main goals, replacement goals. But one thing that IDNR is going to look at is a replacement plan. So this slide is a plan that we are aware of that some people use. So you know, ductile iron pipe has a useful life of 100 years. So some people equate that to replacing 1% a year as far as a goal goes. So we do the math on that, that equates to roughly 8,000 feet a year, and you apply today's cost of that, about 400 pounds a foot, you're between $3 and $4 million a year on water main replacement. So that's pretty hefty. This next slide is kind of something that we're throwing out there as a potential target, something that could work as part of putting into a plan for the IDNR, is targeting about 2,500 feet or about $11 annually, and then kind of ramping that up a little bit over time. And the goal would be to replace all that pre-1949 water main. Some of that is on State Street and then East Main Street, so trying to get those in Washington.
South Main,
and to get that all out of there. And then there are some hybrid areas that certainly would be great if we could address on Pleasure, Georgiana, Prairie, as well as some of the other streets that are going in green and purple. So, covered a lot of material there, just kind of a brief introduction and why it's necessary. Probably be putting the, if it's the direction of the committee, we would put the five-year plan in the CIP, at least for discussion, and then we can take it from there.
So, as we go forward with the Lake Michigan water, are there some of the, in the project, is it some of the expenses that we're going to contemplate with this kind of stuff in that? Or is this separate?
Not yet. That will be a separate item that we have in there, upgrades to our system. But as of now, anything that you've seen is not included in any replacement.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll help you get down to your 10% water loss, which is one standard with Lake Michigan. And there might be a street or two that's an overlap between the internal system improvements and what we're planning with Road to Better Roads. But for the most part, it's two separate pots.
Okay, I didn't know if Lake Michigan water would take some of this stuff into account that we need to fix.
It'd be more like we would be funding something that potentially we would have to do under a Lake Michigan system, but it might only be a couple water mains within
right.
that group.
No. Casey, any guy there?
Nope.
Want to just have to start making a decision and narrow it down here soon enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, no matter what, you should fix the water main.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that by starting this 5-year replacement program gives us a great starting spot. It gives us a goal to shoot for every year, and then if we can add to it, that would be. What's that? 29 is our oldest. On South Main.
it's our, it's informational and it's our recommendation.
It is informational, yeah, for the most part. The direction, you know, would be to move forward with the plans that were talked about within, specifically as it relates to implementing some of the initiatives related to water loss, and then, you know, kind of moving towards a more robust Road to Better Roads plan for water mains.
No old business? Any additional business? Okay. Are you good? Alright. Excellent. Well, I guess with that, we'll go to the public meeting to close at 6:45.
Alright, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alright, see you, Jason.